Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey guys, it's Grant Paulson. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We're changing things up. We're going to be making the show available for you 1 hour at a time. So if you're looking for a specific part of the hour of a show, look below at the description of what we've been talking about for time cues.
It's Danny. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you live on the radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 106.7 The Fan.
Well done, as always, Pete. Good morning to you and welcome in. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan on this Thursday morning. So much to get to today. Excited to talk about Jordan Reed, who will be out again this Sunday at 10:30. But the conversation about Reed will deal with his future with the Redskins. He got an out in his contract after this season. Is that something the team should exercise and think about utilizing, or is he too talented and you just got to stand by him as he battles through injury? Next hour, we'll get into the comments of Mike Mitchell of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who says that he feels like he's playing flag football and that it's never been more difficult to play safety in the NFL than it is right now. Couple of notes on last night in a moment, but first, Danny, how you feeling?
Crummy, still down in the dumps. I should have taken today off, but I felt guilty. I was like, I can't just leave my pal Grant here twisting in the wind, flailing around by himself. So because I'm such a team guy, I don't want any credit.
You are kidding. A team guy.
I'm just so desperate for attention. But I came in. We're chopping wood here.
So yesterday, for those of you that don't know, there was this ongoing couple of hour dialogue between Danny and the boss and Danny and me and the boss, where there were a lot of conversations happening about Danny very likely taking off the show today. Because you've been working around a cold and you've got all kinds of different little issues. You're under the weather, I would say.
Yeah, I'm fighting it. I'm now, remember, under the weather means different things to Dusty Baker and
That's
it does to
point.
Us. This is not something where I couldn't pitch if it was in a really important elimination game.
You're here.
I'm here.
But you've been under the weather. So our boss said, why don't you just take a day and sleep and feel better and maybe that day will recharge your batteries,
and
say
I,
Thursday or Friday.
It's a good idea. I agreed to that.
And this was a couple days ago. So then yesterday, all day long, the plan was you're not going to be here today.
Do it.
So there was a lot of planning for life without Danny Ruye on Thursday, and there was a lot of conversation.
Didn't require much planning, by the way. It was like, so I'll just do the
That's
show.
A good point.
Yeah, I'll just keep doing the show without him. No one will say anything crazy to my right for a few hours. That's basically it.
But then last night we get a text saying, I feel great. I feel amazing. I'm coming in. You said I took a 2.5 hour nap. Everything's better. And then you get here this morning, and I said, good that you're feeling better, man. And you looked at me, and you said, I feel the exact same. I shouldn't be here.
I just felt guilty. I felt too guilty. I felt too guilty to take off.
I'm glad you're here.
Because I'm like, how scummy is that? I'm gonna go home.
I'd prefer you to be here than not be here. As long as you feel okay about being here, everybody's happy.
Dorgan, listen, I'm here. Just like Owen Wilson and Zoolander, I'm here. Do I know what I'm doing? No, but we're going to do it. We're going to try. Yeah, let's do it.
Caps won again last night.
Dude, they're rolling.
6 wins in their last 7. They're 12-5 since the start of November. The demise of the Washington Capitals was greatly exaggerated. And by the way, speaking of demises being exaggerated, Alex Ovechkin is leading the NHL with 21 goals.
21 goals.
I don't know if people know this, but Ovi, who last year scored 33 all season, had 16 even strength goals all year. He's got 15 right now. Which is staggering.
You would say he's on pace to beat last year's total. You would say that.
But it's one thing to score on the power play, and he does that plenty. Mm-hmm. But even strength 5-on-5 goals are pretty indicative of the best goal scorer in the sport. 2 more than Nikita Kucherov, now 21-19 for the NHL lead. On pace for a 7th Rocket Richard, a 8th 50-goal season. You understand? He is on pace for 50 goals this year.
That's amazing. The Nicklas Backstrom, now he took, there's a puck that hit his stick, and he directed it past a goaltender into this cage-type environment. It's known as a goal in the sport. It went across the red line before anybody touched it. There's a line that indicates if it's in or out. And it was called, what was it called? What did he get?
A goal?
A goal! Yeah. Nicklas Backstrom scored a goal.
First in 21 games.
It had been many moons.
It had been. So last night I was hanging out at NBC Sports Washington watching the game. I did eat more grilled delicious wings. I've found a new place.
Yes.
I have extended now my number of bars that I eat wings at every day to like four or five.
What's your total? What's your goal? The goal is to find double digits or just to keep at it,
no matter what? Are these just for wings or are these the restaurants I frequent? Like, should I include Yard House for Maui Pineapple Chicken, or are you just talking about right after work when I try to get my grilled wings?
I'm just talking about your grilled wing addiction.
We've got Lucky's in the Springfield area.
We know about that.
We've got the Green Turtle in the Springfield area. We've got Yard House at next to Yard House is Dave & Buster's at Springfield Mall. They got a bar down there. It's pretty good. And I would add to that list Tapped in Bethesda. Tapped Sports Bar.
Tapped Sports Bar.
I now hit that joint up about three times a week.
Now, do you think you might experience some of that same embarrassment as the Mr. Maui Pineapple Chicken situation, where they see you coming and they know what you want?
Well, it's the same guy in there every single time. I think he works every day.
Yep.
He absolutely knows what I want. He goes, "Do you want a lemon in your tea today?" That's kind of his way of talking.
I like that you're getting over the embarrassment.
I'm not getting over the embarrassment.
Oh, you're not?
I still feel great shame. I just persevere and kind of live my life.
The worth itness, this is a terrible term. What a weird turn of a phrase. The benefit, though, of getting your iced tea unsweetened and your grilled wings outweighs the shame and embarrassment.
Every time.
I got it.
Also, I make way less eye contact. So this is how I know that when those experts say that eye contact is the sign of confidence or something,
yes,
that they're right. Because I'll be at one of these bars and not look up and make eye contact with a bartender I'll be like staring at my phone, just scrolling through, and I'm like, "Hi, how are you doing?" Being very friendly. "Is your day going well?" "Good." And I'll realize I haven't made eye contact yet, and I've been there 6 minutes. It's one of those things where it's like, if I don't look up at them, they won't think I'm here.
There's a little bell going off in your head, rhythmically, and an old woman saying shame.
Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch will be on the show at 11 to discuss the Redskins. You know what I want to ask Miguel Philippe when he joins the program? He's a Redskins beat reporter.
Yes, he is.
He covers the team on a daily basis. He is in the locker room. He is one of the guys that Dan Patrick yesterday said that receivers are talking to behind the scenes and alleged basically, well, the receivers are telling the reporters in the locker room that they don't really like the guy. I texted a few of those reporters yesterday. John Keim and Craig Hoffman. We're getting Michael Phillips on to discuss it today. I said, "Oh, I didn't know that the wide receivers were giving you guys nuggets on not liking Cousins. You were holding out on us. Maybe you should have told us that." Because that was the allegation.
Right.
Made nationally. People, by the way, I wasn't attacking Dan Patrick yesterday. People took this in a very weird way, I think, when we had a segment about Dan Patrick's comments about Kirk Cousins. My point is not that Dan Patrick is making something up or lying.
Well, that's what they heard, though. Why? Well, when you say, "I don't believe this," and then here's why, it turns into, but that means Dan Patrick is lying. There's a huge possibility. If you're told information that isn't accurate and you go with that, that's not, it's the same way when we have Ian Rappaport on, who gets a report from somebody. Somebody told him that thing about them evaluating Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Because we don't necessarily buy that doesn't mean that we're calling Ian Rappaport a big fat liar. You see what I'm saying?
So here's what I thought about last night. Because I sometimes will take the show home with me and like wear all night long like different things that we talked about or issues on the show.
It's natural. We all do that.
Yeah. So here is what I'm thinking at this point on the Dan Patrick front. I think I care more, and maybe I shouldn't, and this is an incorrect stance of mine on kind of what we do, where information came from and what's legitimate or not, than just what the commentary is.
I don't think it's more than you should. It's how we got here.
Yeah.
How we got here is you grinded your you-know-what off as a reporter and built a name for yourself. And, like, the thing, quote-unquote, you got wrong one time about a slot wide receiver potentially signing has eaten away at you for 5 years.
But my point is,
you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm not calling you out on that. I'm simply saying, like, that's what you value. You care about that.
Sure.
I have no problem with that.
Here is my point, I guess, if I can make it make more sense for people at home, because I know you know what I'm trying to say. I don't know if they do. When something like this is floated, there's such a big difference between a report sourced and just a guy saying something. I care so much about that difference. I think that that's important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people necessarily do.
I agree with that.
Number one. Number two, I think that that's a pretty big bomb to just loft out there. Like, whether it's about a quarterback or it's about a coach, He's lost the team. Yeah, I'm hearing that players don't like playing for the guy. Where that comes from matters. And also, it was worded in such a weird way that, to me, it's very likely he just talked to Mike Florio. You know, Mike Florio is talking to an agent or somebody. He's not talking to a player, probably. But the point is, it's a game of phone. It's just a game of telephone in a theater class in seventh grade in King George Middle School, where Florio talked to an agent. An agent's upset. If every time an agent told me that they were mad at a coach or a coordinator or a quarterback and I went with it, I mean, that's all I would ever have time to do, because agents are always mad about their player not being utilized better. So someone says something, and I'm just guessing it's Florio, but if you could take Florio's name out and it could be someone else. But someone says something to a reporter. Dan Patrick talks to that person, Florio or Marshall Faulk or whoever. Then he just casually says something on his TV show and radio show. I guess my point is, I'm not calling into question his legitimacy, his credibility. What I'm saying is, stop taking everything as gospel. Someone just says something on a show casually. It's different than, yeah, I'm hearing from an inside source in the building that the wide receivers don't like Kirk Cousins. But I think the average person at home goes, ah, Dan Patrick, he's a big name. He knows. Well, no, that's not the way this works. And I just don't know if people care how it works. I think they should, though.
Yeah, I know you do. And I think the regular consumer, let's say I'm going to work today and I've got a few minutes and I'm thinking about the Redskins in between meetings or times I'm getting coffee or whatever. As a regular fan who lived his life that way for however many years, I wouldn't care that badly about that. The things that I would care about is somebody speaking out of school. I don't care if crappy players don't like somebody that's responsible for them. You know what I mean?
Like, consider it out of school if, let's say, and I'm just spitballing here, obviously, but not alleging this is what happened, but just as an example. Terrell Pryor's agent is Drew Rosenhaus.
Mm-hmm.
If Drew Rosenhaus says to Mike Florio in a conversation while they're talking, and they talk a bunch, I'm sure he's one of the better reporters in the country, and he says, yeah, man, Terrell thought he was going to get the ball thrown to him more, and Kirk didn't throw him the ball as much as he should have, and he didn't like this or that, or this is the thing about this guy that I don't love. And then he says that to a reporter. And then Dan Patrick's having a conversation with that reporter, and he's like, yeah, I heard this from this guy. Is that out of school? I mean, it's not like a player's leaving the locker room and dogging someone.
Well, what I mean out of school is, if it is true, if it is the normal game that everybody thinks it is, a.k.a. a player spoke to somebody directly, than someone speaking out of school. If it's the president of the team speaking to Ian Rappaport saying, we're going to evaluate Kirk Cousins for these next five games, that's out of school. It's another leaking ship. So that's all I care about if I'm a fan. If I'm consuming this thing, you're right. I wish the nuances of reporting and journalism were important to people. I can tell you that they're not. I can tell you the way web traffic works indicates that it's not. People would rather have, just sort of, what's the word, aggregated crap than actual original reporting and thinking. It is obvious.
I had some guy post on my Facebook wall the other day, like, the debate is over in all caps. I got players on my side. And the video he posted was of Marshall Faulk saying that Kirk Cousins had a bad game or whatever. And he's like, your opinion is one thing, but I got players on my side. And again, that's another example of, like, this guy doesn't study the film of the Redskins. He's probably seen three or four Redskins games in parts all season long. And he was sitting in the stadium that night, maybe paying attention, maybe not. I question that after his commentary. But you see what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter who says it or where the information comes from. As long as you've heard of them and you had their football card once, or you've seen them on TV for a bunch of years, you just take it as gospel.
But to I remember going inside baseball here, but to get back to it, what you care about and what you hold on to and harness, like a dog on the mailman, that makes sense, because given your background. What I focus on and harness, and I think what a lot of fans focus on and can't let go, is maybe a different set of criteria. I don't think anything's wrong with either one, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
To me, I care about the simple fact that we're here again, it's a losing season, and now the losing talk is happening, where somebody's saying something that gets to somebody, and I want it to not happen.
But you seem to be able, though, to like understand the difference, which most people don't. I don't think acknowledge this difference, which is maddening to me, which is someone just saying something and someone reporting something. To me, that is such an important, huge difference.
Yeah.
You can very easily slice those two into categories.
Sure. But I think what you said, though, to also categorize it, it's not that important to people. Just for the, again, the regular guy that's living it's his life that does that doesn't get paid based on sports. The regular guy that is a government contractor like I was for years,
right,
that just wants to book my next stand-up comedy gig, that, you know, that hopes my that ceiling doesn't leak again. That guy doesn't necessarily have time to distinguish. Well, this was actually a rumor that was spread. This is not a report. This is someone said something. You know, I don't know if anybody has time to distinguish that, to be honest with you.
I feel like it's important if you're going to be very opinionated on a subject to just
sure.
have the information correct.
And I get that.
But look at politics and everything else. I mean, people don't necessarily operate that way. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, just getting started. The NFL may be taking a page out of college football's book when it comes to the targeting rule. We'll explain next as we are underway. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Big story out of the NFL yesterday is that the league will now consider automatic ejections for targeting. You should recognize that word targeting because it's used in college football, and the NFL may be adapting the system that the college game has gone to over the last couple of years. The NFL, via ESPN.com, going to look at the framework of a rule that has been in place since 2013 in college football. In February of this year at the NFL's competition committee meetings, they're discussing the possibility of a targeting rule that would basically require a mandatory ejection for players who hit defenseless opponents above the shoulder. Quote from Troy Vincent, who's the NFL's executive vice president of football operations, had a conference call with reporters Wednesday. I think it is something that we have to consider. He said, we have seen it work. It's worked to a degree. It's clean. That play is reviewable at the collegiate level, but we think there's been some positives. Talking to some of the conferences, the officials, and some of the student-athletes, that it is a deterrent. It's something that we will consider. It is on our agenda, end quote. Danny, I hate the college football targeting rule.
Oh, do I hate it.
I despise everything about it for a lot of reasons, but specifically, I think guys routinely get ejected that don't deserve it. And what happens in college football is that you miss two halves. Whichever half of football you're playing in, whether it's the first minute or the last minute of that half, and the next half. So if it's a second half infraction like the Juju Smith-Schuster infraction,
you miss the first half.
You would miss the first half of the next game. Now, they do review the hits. So theoretically, you'd go underneath of the little booth, the flap comes over your head, or you put on the headset and you watch with someone in New York or wherever. Maybe Troy Vincent is going to be sitting in some room helping you out here. And as long as there's a uniform philosophy on when you get ejected and when you don't, it's got a chance to be somewhat successful. But in college, what happens is almost all the time, when anything dangerous or scary or violent happens, when any hit that looks like it isn't football from 2030 and instead it's football from 2003, the benefit of the doubt almost always goes to ejecting a guy. And if it happens two plays into a game and a football play happens where a safety's coming downhill and a receiver dives and a quarterback throws a terrible pass, so the receiver's now outstretched and the safety blows him up, he's out for the game. I hate the college targeting rule. And for the NFL to adapt it, in my opinion, would be a huge mistake.
It's beyond a mistake. It's a reactionary attempt to show something that they could do in terms of more expensive equipment and increased player safety in a million different ways. If you hide under the guise of let's increase player safety, who's going to say no to that? Everybody's in favor of that, right? It's like a law. Say, for example, we're like, hey, in order to reduce fatalities, in order to reduce a bunch of different things, we're just going to ban alcohol. We know how well that works out, right? Everybody understands this. The rule, in effect, is basically, as you said, when in doubt, throw them out. Beyond that, this is players' livelihoods. This is people's lives and jobs and money, et cetera. Then beyond that, you're adding an extra layer of review. College games already take too long as it is. Now, part of that is the stop clock after every damn first down. But they review everything. Don't do that. You're making everything worse. I understand the desire here because you're reacting to something that's happened. You've got some injuries that are dealing with hits. As you know, whenever we have these discussions of whether a guy should be suspended or not, I almost always default to the player who is making the hit because of how easy it is for us and how difficult it is for them in real time to change a target where a guy ducks his head and all of a sudden it looks vicious when it wasn't before.
I say this all the time.
This needs to not happen.
The game is so much faster than we know. It just is. The coolest experience I have ever had. We are very lucky getting to do this for a living. But one of my favorite things ever that I've been able to do is watch NFL games from the sideline. And not in their entirety by any means, but at one point in time, I could go down on the field for the last couple minutes of an NFL game. And the speed of the game, something I haven't done now in 4 or 5 years, so it's probably even faster, is so stunning and so crazy that you can't even process it unless you're down there. And the idea that these guys are supposed to be able to pull up or change the angle or not hit someone when they're programmed to do so for 20-plus years, every single time is incorrect. And to me, the Juju Smith-Schuster block, which was unnecessary and not dirty, but completely not needed, would lead to him being suspended for two halves of football. I don't think that has to happen. Here's what you should do, by the way. You've already, as of this past offseason, told officials to eject guys for egregious hits. You have already said they have the ability to do that. On a first penalty, if they wanted to eject Juju Smith-Schuster, they could have done it. If they wanted to eject Rob Gronkowski, and by the way, they should have, in my opinion, in that situation, so dirty, so far after the play, they could.
Yep.
The officials have decided, for whatever reason, that they are not going to eject players to this point. We have not seen ejections yet. So how about you just use that option before you go to the targeting philosophy that will lead to many more ejections? Because when that toothpaste comes out of the tube, it doesn't go back in.
The rule on its face is a good idea. Again, because what are we trying to do? Make players safer. So as soon as you hear, we have a rule to make players safer, it's about hitting. It's about getting illegal hits out of the game. Everyone will go, yeah, of course. Well, sometimes something that works in a lab, something that works on paper in a boardroom in New York City, when applied to actual sporting events, is a terrible rule.
Right.
This is one of those times. On paper, it's a great idea. In practicality, you and I both know a guy gets ejected for doing something that you would tell him to do 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Once a week in college football, someone gets ejected and misses sometimes the big part of the next game for something that basically should have happened and happens in football all the time, which is a bang-bang play in the middle of the field and they were in the wrong place at the wrong time doing their job. That is a hard-to-argue fact. 800-636-1067 if you've got an opinion on the NFL considering adapting college football's targeting rules. Next, we want to play some audio from a Pittsburgh Steelers defender speaking in the locker room yesterday while one of his teammates is still in a hospital fighting to get all the feeling back in his legs, for the record, talking about how he signed up for this and we might as well start playing flag football if the league's going to keep trending in this direction. Brant and Danny on the Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Kind of launching, not unlike, quote, leaving your skates in hockey. If you leave your feet going upwards toward the head of an opponent, you get ejected from a game. Used to be a 15-yard penalty and a flag, still is. Now they review all of those personal foul 15-yard penalties, and when they deem that you've done one of the things you're not allowed to, in a very fast game at a very critical moment, they throw you out immediately and you miss two halves of football.
It's silly, because if you slow down every hockey hit that's ever happened in the history of the sport, a skate comes off the ice.
Right.
This just in. It's, again, the game happens too fast. It's easy to slow down and something looks way worse than it is. Targets move. If a guy stands still like a practice dummy and you hit him in the head, fine, eject him. That's never happened in the sport.
Steelers safety Mike Mitchell in the locker room yesterday was adamant and was very into, and I think probably, I would say, yes, he was candid, but he was emotional and you're going to hear a clip here in a second. When asked about this by reporters, now, this story actually about the NFL maybe adapting college football's way of doing things came out subsequently later. It was all part of the same conversation, which started with the Steelers-Bengals game the night before. Juju Smith-Schuster suspended a game. Georgia Loka initially suspended a game. That got wiped away. You got a Steeler, Ryan Shazier, still in the hospital, who's trying to recover fully from a helmet-to-helmet collision that happened within the context of a play. Here's what Mitchell had to say about football being a game that is not for everybody.
End of the day, this is football. If you want to see flag football, then let's take our pads off. That would make it easier for me because now I don't got to wear heavy But give us flags for me to pull off because that way I know what we're playing. You know, I signed up to play full speed contact football and we're not doing that. I feel like I got to ask a guy, hey, are you ready for me to hit you right now before I hit you? And that's crazy. I'm going to mess around and get hurt trying to protect an offensive player because he's running an over route. Damn it, your quarterback shouldn't have threw that ball messed up. That happened 2 years ago. I'm not joking at all. Andy Dalton threw a ball to Tyler Eifert 2 years ago. Tyler Eifert had to dive for it. I was aiming for his gut. But if he don't dive, he don't get in the head. That's 50 grand out of my pocket, though, because Andy throws a bad ball. Make that make sense. And at first you're taking our money, but now, you know, I got like Matt Hasselbeck calling me a dirty player and trying my character, and we've never met before. I donate more money to Cincinnati, underprivileged kids, than probably the people on the Bengals. So don't give me that name. My nephew goes to school there, man. I take all that personally. If you don't know me, if you never had a conversation with me, don't judge us by what you see on football, because football is my competitive side. You know what I'm saying? So it's just so much going on in the game right now. Yes, obviously I'm a little flustered, but I mean, we just got to do better. We got to do better. I said it yesterday. We got to do better as players when we sign the next CBA. We got to get better leadership as who's running the league, because obviously everybody from fans, owners, players are all disappointed in Roger Goodell. We just got to do better. We can't have a guy where you just hand out discipline on how you see fit. There needs to be a set guideline of how we do what we do.
I agree with every word he said in that.
It would have been inappropriate if I was a reporter in that pool, but I might have just put my mic down and started clapping.
Yeah.
Because that is so excellent.
I mean, it is an applaudable, just perfect soliloquy while being emotional and, as he said, flustered. But not an or a stutter. He was perfect. I agree with everything that he just said. And you do. If you're a safety, have to hear from people saying that you are dirty, that you are a jerk, that you aren't taking the game's changes in stride the way that you need to because you don't care enough about the health of the players you're playing against. I mean, he called Matt Hasselbeck a name that I can't say on the radio. The FCC would get upset. But the point is, if you're Mike Mitchell and you hear that all the time, unless you're Vontaze Burfict and you got a rap sheet longer than my arm with the dirty hits and terrible moments, it probably isn't fair to say that you're dirty after a big hit in the middle of the field when you're a center field safety in the National Football League. Here was more Mike Mitchell from yesterday in the locker room.
Before I got drafted, I had $368 to my bank account. That is far from the case today. I've changed my family legacy by this beautiful game of football for forever. So let's not try to turn it into some evil, dirty game. It's football. It's no different than UFC fighting. This is a combat contact sport. There's going to be injuries. That's just what it is. But if you don't want to get injured, then don't come out here. This is for real men. This is a man's game. Ray Lewis said that a couple years ago. I stand by that. It's a man's game. If you want to be a little kid, you don't want to get your ass hit, then don't come out here because this is for grown men.
So that is a lot of tough guy bravado talk. And it's a lot of we're the last gladiators, you rub dirt on my chest kind of Ray Lewis stuff. But I am coming around on this way of thinking, believe it or not, Danny. As much as you and I think would hear that normally and go, oh, that's tough guy talk.
Right.
We got to be smarter as people. You know what? I think the opinion that I am having over the last couple of years shaped is, yes, we should do what we can to make the NFL safer. And where we can, we should cut some corners and try to give players the most information and knowledge on concussions as possible. If you get dinged, if your bell gets rung, if you're dizzy on the field, get off the field. We should do everything that the league is doing in those regards.
Right.
I think the way that I now feel about football, though, is you're opting in, man. If you don't want to play, you don't have to. No one's making you. I'm not going to compare it to a lot of people compare it to, like, we have kids going to war. I'm not going to do that. Here's what I will compare it to. Driving a race car, NASCAR, or whatever the Indy 500 is. What kind of cars are those? You would know, Tom. IndyCar.
IndyCar.
Thank you. Whatever those are, right? You get in those, and guys die, it seems like, once every 6 years in crashes or something like that in those cars. I can think of three or four times in my lifetime where someone has died in a crash because they went up the wall. They're not changing that sport. They're not making those cars less fast. They're not putting governors on those cars to make them, instead of going from 220 miles an hour to, you can't go over 140 now. In NASCAR racing, they're not taking those cars and saying, well, it used to be 210. Now, we don't want them going above 95, so that we're going to keep them at this. They're not changing the tracks necessarily. He mentioned mixed martial arts. Boxing. Boxing is still guys beating each other's brains in. As much as we know about the trauma of the brain with every collision between a fist or any kind of contact to your head and what it does. To me, football just needs to be viewed through the lens of, this is a dangerous game. If players want to play, they should be allowed to. They're paid a lot of money to do it, but they have to know what they're getting themselves into. And the difference is, 20 years ago, I don't know that guys did. That was unfair. Guys were lied to for a long time. But I think in the future, moving forward, you need to understand that there could be long-lasting, lifelong ramifications. That you could never be the same person after you step on that football field. That every game you play in, you could end up not walking again. We don't even know what's going on with Ryan Shazier. Have you heard yet if he's walking?
He's in Pittsburgh, still being rehabilitated. So they moved him back from Cincinnati to Pittsburgh. But he's still in the hospital as far as I know.
But a few years ago, my point was, you know what? If the product of the game suffers, if football gets worse, so be it. Enough of the players are like Mike Mitchell where they say, I'm signing up for this. If you're allowed to go fight in the UFC, or you're allowed to go do whatever it is that puts you in a lot of risk, if you're a window washer, every time you go out there, you're getting paid X amount of dollars an hour because there's a risk that you could fall from the third floor.
I don't know what reasonable person, there may be a couple guys that are crazy about this, but I think any reasonable person would never disagree with the idea of, let's do everything we can to make the game safer. If for selfish reasons, you don't want to see players that you like not playing. You don't want to have the game miss stars. I mean, even from that, and that's obviously like the 35th reason why it's important. But
right.
Just from a viewing pleasure perspective, I don't want to see stars get hurt. I don't want to see 53rd guys on the roster get hurt. I want the best product possible. So nobody disagrees with making the game safer. That includes, by the way, are they using the safest equipment? I don't know that.
Keep updating your equipment.
I saw a story where there's a really expensive helmet that doesn't seem to be commonplace just yet.
To my NASCAR analogy, just like they update the cars. Now you're strapped in a certain way. Your helmet's not moving. You've got the padding that they have on your neck that they didn't used to have pre-Dale Earnhardt.
The inherent risk will never go away. You can limit it as much as you possibly can, but there's an inherent risk. That I think that everybody understands that we sign up for that. We know that there's a dangerous element to it. If it wasn't, it would just be the electronic chessboard where these guys are, or the vibrating football board, and people just kind of fall down and it's boring. It's exciting because there's a danger element, and we can acknowledge that, or we can pretend that it isn't there. My issue, and I want to go back to what Mitchell is saying, and I think he's 100% right about this, is there are no defined parameters. And this really pertains to the CBA, as he mentioned. It pertains to Roger Goodell. It pertains to the owners talking out of both sides of their mouths and the league not knowing what it wants. The league wants entertainment at the highest possible, and now they're panicking because for the first time, the ratings aren't invincible anymore over these last couple years.
Right.
Nobody knows what to do.
Well, people are going to hear this, and they're going to hear and say, I can't believe you guys think that they should just be allowed to go kill themselves on the field. Not what we're saying. Make the game as safe as you can with realistic changes. But at some point, this is an opt-in for a very dangerous game. And I'm actually with Mike Mitchell on this. 800-636-1067 is the number. Your calls are next on Grant and Danny.
These are all things that are negative, but let's not try to turn football into a dangerous, barbaric game. This is how I've changed my family legacy.
Mike Mitchell singing the praises of football while saying, yes, this is a risk that we are willing to take. Big problem for me, there was a long time when players didn't know what they were getting themselves into.
They were lied to.
As we get smarter, we'll find out more and more. That information should be disseminated the second you get it at every turn. But I also think if players want to make millions to play football, they should be allowed to. Just like if you want to have any job, and there are plenty of them where there is inherent risk, where you don't live as long, you're allowed to do that. Think about even just like our diets or whatever we do in our lives, right? This is probably an overstated way to think about it, but if you eat whatever you want every single time you have a meal, which up until last December with EMP 180 weight loss is kind of how I lived, I never one time in my life, I mean this, Danny, I never one time before a meal thought, is this healthy for me? Is this good for me? Or like, what are the ramifications? I just didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I went to McDonald's multiple times a day. I ate whatever I want because I was hungry and it was delicious and that's what I wanted in that moment. I never one time didn't eat something because, well, if I eat this right now, I'll get fatter. I never thought like that. I got up to 280 pounds, by the way. But I was killing myself. I mean, if you want to be like serious about
morbid about it, yeah.
You're allowed to go eat whatever you want. You're allowed to go, in some cities, do a drug. You're allowed to go drink alcohol to excess if you want to. You could do whatever you want to do. That's a choice you have to make. Football players are making the choice. Pay me millions. I will risk my body. And I think what we should do as much as we can to protect them. At some point, we've got to throw our hands up and say, this is what this game is.
So, after all those things, here's my next thought. Remember how you got annoyed the other day at snarky reaction to Herm Edwards, even though you kind of admitted you wouldn't have hired Herm Edwards?
Yep.
That makes any sense? We can all acknowledge there are some issues when it comes to injuries and football and stomach turning. It's hard to see Ryan Shazier crippled on the field.
That's difficult. I still remember the guy from the Jets who was paralyzed and never walked the right way. I mean, there's a million things that have happened. I've seen a lot of things. What I can't handle, though, is this is my Herm Edwards situation from me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's the unbelievable hand-wringing, pearl-clutching, deadspin sort of everything. Like, you're an evil person if you happen to enjoy football. I mean, that's the level of bargain right
that
now.
That is so annoying.
We're now at the place where, and even guys that I love, for example, I think Jerry Brewer is a special writer. I think he's incredible. Everything he writes, I read. He wrote about this a couple months ago, not on the deadspin level, but the kind of the bargain intellectually he's made with himself to cover and profit from a sport that at times he finds kind of off-putting and stomach-turning because of those injuries. I encourage everybody to make that bargain. And if you opt in, opt in. But it's the level of the vilification of a football fan or someone that's cheering because of a big hit. That's the part to me that makes me want to watch it more, if that makes any sense.
I was at a mall walking on a Saturday this year, and college football was on, and I sat down in a chair. There was a big screen TV in the mall. And this guy walked by, and I heard him saying to the person he was walking with, I can't believe people watch this garbage. And he was just, like, looking down on me because I was sitting there watching this important college football game. There is definitely this feeling out there of people like that. 800-636-1067. Let's mow through as many calls as we can here. Jeff is in Dulles. What's up?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, and you guys touched on it well. Informed consent, right? What are the risks? What's the latest data? What are my options? Those are very important. After that, or given that, then it's an opt-in, right? So you guys have made that point very well. My other point would be really quickly is the discussion's always been, well, if the violence goes away or if it's toned down too much, we're going to lose our core fan base. I'm not so sure anymore with fans liking to see the ball thrown 100 times a game and 75 points a game that they would not suffer. I don't think they would suffer from a loss of that many fans amongst the new school fans, but that's a little bit topic of field of what you're talking about.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. I think what you say is correct. It is an opt-in based on what you know. And to me, that is my, I think, paradigm moving forward on this. It's kind of where I'm going to set up home base.
Yeah, smoking is horrendous for you. The information's
absolutely
out there now.
If you want to smoke, go smoke. You know it might kill you. You want to play football? There's nothing saying you're absolutely going to get CTE, that you're absolutely going to have terrible ramifications, but you're more at risk than the rest of us, it seems like. You want to deal with that? You want to make millions of dollars to play, or some of the people, not that much, a couple hundred thousand to do it, but you're going to have fun and you're going to get cheered on by tens of thousands of people. That's a choice that you are able to make. You're an adult in America. D in Largo, what's up?
Hey, D.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good, man.
Good.
Hey, I've evolved a little bit on this subject. I play, and all my buddies play, you know, through high school. I'm a fantasy football junkie. And so I'm with the whole point of view of this is not flag football, this is not basketball, this is not baseball. But from the NFL's perspective, they can't keep letting these guys get blown up. I have buddies who are trying to convince their kids now, why don't you try baseball? Why don't you try basketball? You know, single mothers are looking at this on TV and saying, No, we can't have this. So going 20 years down the road, they're going to have to go to a strike zone and force it, particularly with the defenseless players. There's no way around it. It's like gay marriage and marijuana. It's coming. So deal with it, and the NFL will be okay.
Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. I think that kids not playing football is probably smart based on what we're learning. Your brain is not developed until a certain age. You don't want your kid to take hits and play football until through their formative years. I think that that's probably reasonable. I think you can kind of sit at the table and have both the mashed potatoes and the turkey. Don't play football until high school. You don't have to necessarily make substantial changes at the NFL level to legislate out every violent hit so that kids can play at 8. They don't need to play at 8. They can play at 17 and 15 and 16, perhaps.
Yeah, they play flag football until a certain
Absolutely.
Age.
Absolutely. I mean, Drew Brees is working on that.
Yeah.
Adam in Manassas, what's up?
Hi, guys. Love the show.
Hey,
I've been trying to think of some ways for incentives for guys to not hit in the head that wouldn't involve an injection. Things that, and I had a couple of rule changes I want to just throw at you and see what you thought. One is if the defense should never benefit from a helmet to helmet. Like, such if you cause a fumble, it doesn't count as a fumble. Or the Antonio Brown play at the end of the game. Had they hit him in the head and he actually dropped it, it counts as a touchdown. As a result, so the defense should never get the benefit of a helmet to helmet hit. And the other possible thing I thought of, other than like the ejection, is what if we football?
Any kind of change that's major again, because so many of these plays are bang bang.
I mean, I like the idea that it's forward thinking, but you're now changing the nature of the sport. You know what I mean? Where it's the penalty has always been enforced in yardage, and now you're going, well, now you got to lose a player. Well, if you target someone else, you 10-on-9. What's the limit?
One thing I am for is a strike system, which other sports have some of, which is, if you do this 2 or 3 times, you get suspended for a game. And it's an actual set-in-stone policy. First hit is your first warning. Second hit is you're out for a game. Third hit is you're out 2 games. Fourth hit is you're out for 6 games.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do. Because I think track records should matter. If you have a violent way of playing that can be tuned up a little bit, let's help you curb that. But you can't take the football out of football. As Mike Mitchell's trying to say, I think that playing safety in this league right now, as fast as it is and as violent as the collisions are, is almost impossible. And yet this guy is going to turn on the TV and hear what a terrible person he is after a game because he made a tackle of a receiver who was trying to catch a pass that Andy Dalton threw inaccurately. Dar, will you do this? Can you see if Phillips can do 11:30? Because I want to take some of these. I got a guy telling me I'm wrong about the NASCAR comp, so I want to hear about that because he probably knows way more about NASCAR than I do. Chase has a hilarious analogy I want to get to as well. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. There are a few lines open. We'll get to all your calls next. 800-636-1067. The question is, Mike Mitchell going hard against the league, saying that we opt in. We know the risks now. Please let us play football. We're improving our lives and our families' lives. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.